You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We're talking about the politics of hip-hop.
Straight out of Compton, crazy named Ice Cube. From the gang called Niggas with Attitudes. When I'm called off, I got a sawed off. Squeeze the trigger and bodies are hauled off. You too, boy.
NWA broke onto the West Coast rap scene nearly 30 years ago with a blunt political message based on their experience with police in Compton, California. Now a new movie tells their story at a time when Black Lives Matter and American policing and race relations are all over the headlines. And what about rap and hip-hop now? Their politics, their message? This hour On Point, political hip-hop from NWA to right now. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are rap and hip-hop carrying your issues, your politics today? What's the evolution since NWA and Straight Outta Compton? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. In a moment, we'll be joined by Bakari Kitwana from Cleveland, hip-hop historian there. With us right now from Atlanta is Franny Kelly, NPR music editor, co-editor of NPR's music blog, The Record, and co-host of Microphone Check, NPR's hip-hop podcast, which she hosts with Ali Shaheed Muhammad, member of the influential 90s alternative hip-hop group, A Tribe Called Quest. She is also editor-in-chief of Yours Truly, music and culture blog. Franny Kelly, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Kind of crazy how the movie has put NWA back and its story back in front of everybody just when we've got the anniversary of Ferguson. And just one after another in the string of, confrontations and killings between African-Americans and police in this last year, it has made all of this seem unbelievably relevant just when the film comes out. I don't know if they timed it for this, but timing sure broke their way.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, we are seeing their song being publicly used, maybe as they always meant it to be used recently. Also, I think they made the movie, to me, the shape of the movie speaks to what's happening right now. The stories that they chose to tell, the stories that they cut, all add up to the focus on Black Lives Matter.
We're going to hear the music from that time, from the interim years, and from now when it comes to rap and hip-hop, and look at the politics or the political edge of that music. Not all of it is politically edged by any means, but here's a scene from the new NWA biopic Straight Outta Compton. The group is answering questions here in the show from the press about the content of their music. It was very controversial at the time. Ice Cube here, played by O'Shea Jackson Jr., that is Ice Cube's actual son, takes the first question.
Your songs, they glamorize the lifestyle of gangs, guns, drugs.
Our art is a reflection of our reality. What you see when you go outside your door?
I know what I see.
And it ain't glamorous.
You get AKs from Russia and cocaine from Colombia.
And ain't none of us got a passport, so...
Yeah.
Might want to check the source.
Yeah, next question.
Will you be more careful about what you say, how you say it?
No. Probably not. No.
Why? Freedom of speech includes rap music, right? But we exercising our First Amendment, as far as I'm concerned.
And the government wrote that.
They're from Straight Outta Compton, actors playing DJ Yella and Ice Cube and Eazy-E. Dr. Dre, of course, was right in the middle of that as well. And can you hear the sound of that in the streets these days? Last fall, Ferguson, Missouri, after a grand jury decided not to indict Officer Darren Wilson, a man with a bandana across his face, the words, "I know my rights," scrawled across it to the New York Times why he was then out in the streets.
I said, I'm tired of being peaceful and tired of being calm, you know? They've been going to war on us for over 400 years, so, hey, I ain't peaceful. I ain't no protester. I'm violent.
I am not about, I ain't peaceful, is saying right there. There was a message of defiance in the music that came down out of NWA, the most controversial of their songs. We can't even say the name on the air, but it's sort of like To Hell with the Police. Here it was.
The police coming straight from the young nigga got it bad cause I'm brown and not the other color, so police think they have the authority to kill a minority. Oh, that is cause I ain't the one for a punk with up with them with a badge and a gun to be beaten on and thrown in jail. We can go toe to toe in the middle of a sale with me cause I'm a teenager with a little bit of gold and a pager, searching my car looking for the product.
is selling narcotics. You rather see me in the pen than me and Lorenzo rolling in a Benzo. Be the police out of shape, and when I finish, bring the yellow tape to tape off.
Straight out of Compton there in 1988. Franny Kelly is with us, co-host of NPR's hip-hop music podcast, Microphone Check. Franny, I'm guessing that is well before your time. But when you listen to that, the message there, the attitude there, and think about hip-hop today, what's the evolution, Franny?
Well, I appreciate you thinking that is well before my time. It almost is. It's certainly not before the time of the co-host of my podcast, as you mentioned, Ali Shaheed Muhammad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are all these divisions in when people talk about rap music. There's political, there's gangsta. It's pretty exciting that today NPR is calling NWA political. That was not always the case. But, you know, we divide groups and we say that they are allowed to have certain subject matter. And A Tribe Called Quest is usually called, you know, conscious. But Ali has told me, Jarobi also, actually, that NWA was hugely influential on A Tribe Called Quest, and that in 1988, Ali was the only person in the group with a car, and that Straight Outta Compton was on repeat the entire time he was driving around. So, I mean, I think it's important to keep in mind that music that sounds very different still contains the seeds of liberation in rap music.
The influence goes on and on. The sound changes. The track that's getting a lot of attention now in the streets, Cornel West calls it the anthem of the movement for the younger generation, comes from Kendrick Lamar. All right, let's listen to a little bit of that. You can hear them back-to-back, NWA 1988. Here's Kendrick Lamar this year from To Pimp a Butterfly. All right.
Tell the world I know it's too late. Boys and girls, I think I've gone crazy. Inside my face is all day. Won't you please believe when I say, when you know we've been hurt, been down before. When our pride was low, looking at the world like, where do we go? And we hate po-po, wanna kill us dead in the street for sure. I'm at the preacher's door, my knees getting weak and my gun might blow, but we gon' be alright.
Right, you can hear it in the streets these days. They're from Kendrick Lamar. Franny Kelly with NPR, please stand by. With us right now as well from Cleveland, Ohio, is Bakari Kitwana, hip-hop historian, fellow at the Jamestown Project, a progressive think tank, author of Hip-Hop Activism in the Obama Era and The Rap on Gangsta Rap and More. Bakari Kitwana, welcome to On Point. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
How would you describe the arc of rap hip-hop from 88 and NWA to what we're hearing right here behind us, Bakari?
Well, I mean, I think that NWA has to be understood in the political context of the time. You know, there were other artists far more political than NWA who were out before and simultaneous. For example, you had Public Enemy simultaneously being published. Groups like Kool Moe Dee and the Jungle Brothers and others before, Queen Latifah. And so the politics, in my opinion, of NWA that exists within the music was a part of the climate of what was going on, and probably not the most political music that was out. In fact, the heavy anti-black and anti-women overtones was, in my opinion, far more important to their success than anything that they were saying that was political. The political context of the ways in which they described paramilitary policing in black communities that was going on as a result of the war on drugs was probably at the forefront of their contribution to anything political about hip hop.
I mean, that's what strikes me the most today. They were calling out that kind of very, very rough police interaction with people in their community in 1988. When I don't remember, of course, it's always been talked about, but theirs broke through so clearly. Was it because they were so explicit, or was it because this was kind of political rap that was also danceable?
I don't think that it was political rap for the time. I mean, 1984, you have Jesse Jackson's run for president. 1988, mm-hmm. a second run. In between that time, you have the reemergence of the Nation of Islam under Louis Farrakhan. And so there was a political context. There was the Afrocentric movement that was going on in and beyond hip hop on the streets in New York and around the country. And so the politics of NWA, I would argue, for people who were, you know, coming of age and around at the time, was not what people thought about when they thought about NWA. People thought about the misogyny. That was really strong, and it was really – that was something that they really brought to the fore in hip-hop that had not been that prominent before. You had other artists like Schoolie D out of Philadelphia, and you had Luther Campbell coming out of Florida. But that type of misogyny in your face in the way that NWA did it, I mean, that was unprecedented.
No question, plenty of misogyny, but there was also straight, wide-open defiance here of the police, which are, in a way, the political authorities, the tip of the spear. Isn't that political? Just undeniably political?
I think that it was definitely, when you look at NWA and you look at, let's say, what people call gangster rap that came after that. We have to remember that gangster rap was a terminology created by the media. People in hip hop didn't evolve that term. But when you look at what people call gangster rap, as it evolved, it's far less political now than it was with the music that NWA was making.
We're going to look at that. Bakari Kitwana, please stand by in Cleveland. Franny Kelly in Atlanta, Georgia. We're talking about the evolution of the politics of rap, hip-hop, from Straight Outta Compton to right now. Here's Express Yourself from NWA back in 1988. You can join us, 800-423-8255. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
It's crazy to see people be what society wants them to be, but not me. Ruthless is the way to go. They know others say rhymes which fail to be original, or they kill where the hip-hop starts. Forget about the ghetto and rap for the pop charts. Some musicians cuss at home but scared to use profanity when up on the microphone. Yeah, they want reality, but you will hear none. They'd rather exaggerate a little fiction. Some say no to drugs and take a stand, but after the show they go looking for the dope man. Or they ban my group from the radio here in WA and say hell no. But you know it ain't all about wealth, as long as you make a note to spread yourself.
Sitting in my living room, calm and collective, feeling that gotta get my perspective. Cause what I just heard broke me in half, and half the nigga I know, plus the nigga on the road spelling laugh.
I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the evolution of the politics of rap and hip-hop from Straight Outta Compton to right now with Franny Kelly, co-host of NPR's hip-hop podcast Microphone Check. She's with us from Atlanta, Georgia, also editor-in-chief of Yours Truly. Bakari Kitwana is with us from Cleveland, Ohio, hip-hop historian, fellow at the Jamestown Project, author of The Hip-Hop Generation, The Rap on Gangster Rap, and Hip-Hop Activism in the Obama Era. You can join us this hour. Is this the soundtrack of your world? Is it your world? Not just rap and hip-hop, but political rap and hip-hop. Have you seen the new biopic, Straight Outta Compton? Did NWA speak to you then? Does it speak to you now? And has the year since Ferguson put the politics back front and center in the music? The Day the Niggas Took Over here by Dr. Dre behind us, 1991 solo album, G-Funk sound, a lot of party music, themes of violence and power, and then this song, written as a reaction to the Rodney King riots. Dr. Dre, Chronic, 1991. Ethan in Providence, Rhode Island, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing today?
Okay. What do you hear? What do you think?
Well, talking about the Rodney King, you know, that whole situation, I thought that it was a big part of the movie. I saw it about a week ago. And you would think today in our society that, you know, the cops wouldn't be as brutal and things like that would be so much... would be almost taken out of our society, but still, you know, seems like every week you hear about, you know, a ruthless beating of a black person on the street for no apparent reason. And I'm just wondering how and why we still haven't been able to get rid of this in our society in, you know, 30 years since NWA came on the scene.
How and why is a giant question, a reasonable question for a 21-year-old or anybody else. You saw the film, Ethan. Let's listen to a little bit. Here's a scene from the biopic. Where the NWA manager, Jerry Heller, played by Paul Giamatti, walks out of the studio during a recording session break to find members of NWA on the ground being frisked by police.
These are not bangers.
Okay.
These are artists.
Excuse me, artists?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah.
What kind of artists?
Rappers. And they're working with me in the studio right now.
Well, see, rap is not an art. And I'm sorry, who are you?
I'm the manager.
Well, you're wasting your time, Mr. Manager.
You gotta be kidding me.
You're wasting your time.
Really?
These clients of yours, these rappers,
yeah.
They look like gang members.
You can't come down here and arrest people just because of what they look like. Are you crazy? But that's police harassment.
You said you're a manager, right?
Yeah.
Not a lawyer.
Does that matter? You cannot come down here and harass these guys because they're black.
Bakari Kitwana, you've got Paul Giamatti there as the actor yelling at his Jerry Heller in 1988. And our caller, Ethan, says, what's going on? We're in 2015 and this is still going on. How and why can that be? Does hip hop, does rap speak to that now?
I think that hip hop has consistently spoken to that. I think that in terms of the politics of hip hop, what we see happening inside of the music industry is an increasing marginalization of political hip hop artists. So there are lyrical descendants of people like Public Enemy and KRS-One and Poor Righteous Teachers. But these days, most of those artists are publishing independently because they can't get record deals inside the record industry. Those artists are still speaking to those issues. You mentioned earlier Ferguson. Several artists out of Ferguson have two albums out now that are speaking to these issues and very prominently. One is the rapper and writer Tef Poe, who just put out an album called War Machine that speaks to these issues. And another artist out of St. Louis, T. Dubbo, who has a song out called State of Emergency that just came out a week ago. Another artist out of Pittsburgh, Jasiri X, has just put out a single called The Babies, talking about the children of folks who are killed by the police. What happens to these children? The folks who are incarcerated, what happens to their children? So there is an ongoing conversation, but a lot of that conversation isn't happening within the mainstream.
Franny, the pressure here to not be so political in the music, because a lot of the biggest acts are not political. They're more about partying and booze and sex and, you know, big times and puff the chest. Maybe that's where the money is.
Yes, yeah, a long ongoing conversation.
Yeah, no kidding. Franny?
Yeah, I mean, this is, you mentioned The Chronic. I mean, the money goes both ways, right? So The Chronic comes out late 92 and its massive success shows the music industry that there is a lot of money to be made in this music that had previously been thought of as like novelty or just wholesale dismissed. And so because money is being pumped into these labels, they're able to take more chances. There's more balance in the music that's produced and aired and promoted. These days, now that the industry is just a wreck, there's so little money to go around. I mean, I would argue that going independent is actually the smart move, the more financially sound move. So, yeah, there is a lot. What is aired, what is popular, tends to be more nihilistic. And yeah, there is music out there that is like less heard, that is very sharply political in sort of the conservative definition of the term. But, you know, Kanye's talking about police brutality.
Mm-hmm.
He's all over the radio. He's all up in the shows. So there are these ways, and there are many other artists like that, where you can sort of find references to it. You know, J. Cole's out here selling out tours and speaking his truth.
We'll hear some J. Cole. Let's keep an ear on that evolution. We heard Dr. Dre there in 91, 92, The Chronic. 93, here was Tupac Shakur with Holler If You Hear Me.
Pump your fist like this, holler if you hear me. Pump, pump, if you slip to the sellouts, living it up. One way or another, you'll be giving it up. I guess because I'm black boy, I'm supposed to say peace, sing songs in your condos. But it's time for a new plan. Bam, I'll be singing like a one man clan. Here we go, turn it up, don't stop. Tell my homies on the block, keep drop my cops. I'm still around for ya, keeping my sound underground for ya. And I'ma throw a change up. Quit like you never blow my name.
Tupac, 1993, While He Lived. Christopher in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Christopher, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, Tom. I enjoy your show very much.
Thank you, sir. What do you think? What did it mean to you back in the day? What's it mean now?
Well, I'm a 54-year-old African-American male, so I was their audience at the time. To be quite honest with you, N.W.A. weren't even one of my favorite groups. It was more like Tupac's Kill, like we just played, and Public Enemy. But the reason why N.W.A.'s song, F the Police, is relevant is because it addresses a situation that was happening, has been happening forever. They just spoke about it.
It was always there, and they brought it out and just said it. Bakari, that was a shocker for a lot of people in those days, to hear it so bluntly put. I mean, you rightly point to Public Enemy and others who were out there already, but N.W.A. somehow broke through in a big way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, again, what N.W.A. did that was unique in terms of the political conversation was they talked specifically about paramilitary policing in black communities that was a part of the war on drugs. Mm-hmm. This is very essential because I think that there had been police brutality, but the escalation of this style of policing definitely heightened the type of brutality that was going on, the violation of people's constitutional rights. And this is where I think you can draw the line between what was happening then and what's happening now, because it's continued. In 1970, there were only 200,000 people incarcerated in the country. By the year 2000, there were over 2 million people incarcerated, many locked up for nonviolent drug crimes that NWA is what NWA is describing is a style of policing that landed so many people behind bars.
Here from the movie, NWA's the biopic Straight Outta Compton, they go at that. Ice Cube, again played by his son, O'Shea Jackson Jr., gets caught up on his way home in a stop and frisk by the L.A. police. Cube's parents look on from across the street.
Officer, can you explain why you jacking us right now?
Man, I ain't explaining to you.
Get the off the street.
I'm on my property. I can stand right here. You got that? Son, we right here. Where you got the rocks, homeboy.
And not everybody slanging dope, man.
Don't give a this LAPD. I'm the only gangster out here.
Jim in Cleveland, Ohio. Jim, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Thanks. I mean, I guess I just, this really hits a nerve because I just think this band is amazing and they're on my Mount Rushmore of bands, period, not just rap bands. And I think the reason they're on that Mount Rushmore for me is not, or on my Rushmore for all bands is because, you know, living in suburban white kid and outside of New York when I was growing up, who knew what was going on in these cities? You know, you didn't know. You just went to your ball. You know, I went to Yankee Stadium and then came back. And to, like, hear about this and to think maybe this is actually true and then to hear someone say these words and know that you could actually say this, I thought it was very liberating. And I would also thank NWA and Public Enemy and those kinds of bands for showing everyone in the country, putting a mirror up to us and saying, hey, this is happening. And I think that rap has actually come quite a long ways from that as a legitimate art form. At the time, it was kind of, you know, just a bunch of quote-unquote thugs. But I think that NWA proved that, you know, creativity is a beautiful thing. And you can do it in the streets of Compton. You can do it anywhere. And I'm very grateful to them. And I think I actually get a little emotional when I think about it because, you know, as you guys have all talked about, we're still seeing this happen. And, you know, I think it's very sad, but I also, you know, am very grateful to them because kids like me needed to see this, needed to hear about it. And if it was NWA delivering it or Cornel West, it doesn't matter. It was still delivered. And so I'm pretty grateful to them.
The music clued a lot of people in. It kept going here. 2000 Humble Mumble from Outkast.
Republic, we chicken nugget. We dipping the sauce like mopping bucket. Blue collar scholars who take your dollar and wipe my ass with it. You're living for the lotto, never hit it. I met a critic, I made a bitch a draw. She said she thought hip hop was only guns and alcohol. I said, oh hell no, forget it's that too. You can't discriminate because you done read a book or two. What if I looked at you in a microscope? Saw all the dirty organisms living in your closet. When I stop and when I pause it, to put that in slow motion, got the potion and the antidote and a quote for collision. The decision is, do you want to live or want to exist? The game changes every day, so obsolete is the fist and marches. speeches only reaches those who already know about it. This is how we go about it.
Outkast there in 2000 off Stankonia. Andre 3000, not as much fun there as in Hey Ya, but explaining his worldview to a kind of cynical journalist in Humble Mumble. Franny Kelly, our caller in Cleveland, says, look, NWA clued me in. I mean, this was a window opening up for a lot of people, a lot of kids, a lot of white kids, many, many, many white kids over time.
Yeah, I think that those white kids have a lot of money and a lot of power. And if you can enlist them, I mean, let's all just go do this. I mean, one important thing to note is that the woman singing behind him, behind Andre right there, is Erykah Badu.
Yeah,
wow. And she's crucial to that song, to another important song of theirs called Liberation. There, we do need to discuss the absence of women in these stories, because they were there in reality. If you want to talk reality rap, like, women were crucial to these things that have happened. They're largely absent or, like, cartoonized in the movie. We've all, you know, we've heard a lot about this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's
hear some now, if I may. We've got some from along the way. 94, this was the Lady of Rage, Afro Puffs.
I rock with my pants off because it's a must. It's the Lady of Rage still kicking up dust. So let me loosen up my bra strap and let me boost it with my raw rap, because I'm going to break it down to the nitty gritty one time. When it comes to the lyrics, I get busy with mine. Busy as a beaver, you best believe her. This grand diva's running this shit with the speed of a cheetah. Me the lyrical murderer. I'm serving them like two scoops of chocolate. Check out how I rock it. I'm the
Lady of Rage with Afro Puffs. I want to put it to both of you, Franny Bakari. Franny, first to you. Over time, we're talking about the evolution of a genre here. Have you seen misogyny diminish in the rap hip-hop output or not?
Well, to be perfectly clear, I don't really like to discuss misogyny in hip-hop outside talking about misogyny in our general culture. In my experience,
and yet this is a
that
place
is
where
more painful.
But I mean, that is fully fair, and yet it does get concentrated here sometimes, or it's a place where it gets really highlighted, does it not?
In my daily life, I'm more harmed by harassment on the street, harassment in my workplace, diminished expectations on the internet than I've ever been by any words in a rap song.
Okay.
I don't disagree with what you're saying, but I'm not going to sit here and say that...
pile it all on rap and hip-hop.
Well, it's not causal, you know?
I mean, that's fair enough. Still, Bakari, I'm interested. You called out NWA on being anti-woman back in the day.
Right.
Is that a steady state in hip-hop, or is it diminished or increased misogyny over time?
I think that in a lot of ways, NWA created a template that many artists have been continuing. Hip-hop is not the cause of misogyny, but many artists in hip-hop have continued to advance it and to promote it. And I think that it does folks a disservice, I think, to have this film and to not address that aspect of their music, because it was so central. It was so central. It turned a lot of people off to their music. I've talked to people over the course of this week. There have been huge conversations on social media amongst folks who are really into hip-hop and have been for a long time. I was the editor of The Source a little bit after this, and we it's just been an ongoing discussion. It's been a battle. But I think the beauty of that conversation is the conversation that happens within hip-hop itself. A lot of times the conversation about misogyny and hip-hop is folks from the outside pointing the finger at the group, but what happens from the inside amongst, you know, emerging scholarship responding to it, amongst women hip hop artists themselves responding to it, is far more important, I think. I think about writers like Joan Morgan and Gwendolyn Poe. Joan Morgan wrote the book called When Chickenheads Come Home to Roost. And many others, Rosa Clemente and others, have been very outspoken about the misogyny in hip hop. So I think that there is a strong, robust conversation within hip-hop about pushing back against the misogyny. And that, to me, is really exciting, because I think it's politicizing a generation.
We've got more to hear on the evolution of hip-hop. We'll listen to the music itself and hear from Bakari Kitwana and Franny Kelly in Atlanta and Cleveland. You can join us 800-423-8255. A Tree Never Grown by Mos Def and others right here from 2000. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
They come with automatics, but we flip and use the one creator for our blocks. And while stocks get washed, while school doors get locked, and when jobs get blocked, the comfort dance get rocked, and when the welfare's dropped into the jails we stock now. After I'm a dude wrestling with freedom, tax my mind into a headlock. But H&R, I'm a true cat, refunding power back to our blocks.
We proceeded on a country road, his mother's eyes were the soul, the child was never coming home. Said a prayer for a soul, as the coffin it closed, committed to the earth alone. First seed she is sown, will be a tree never grown, shade that was never known. Who controls the terror dome? The memory haunts made of stone, who love only what they own.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes.
All we want to do is take the chains off. All we want to do is break the chains off, man. All we want to do is be free. All we want to do is be free.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
All we want to do is break the chains off.
We're talking this hour about the evolution of the politics of rap and hip hop from Straight Outta Compton to right now behind us. J. Cole with Be Free. Maybe the first song released by a rapper with direct reference to Michael Brown after Ferguson. Stands out as a rapper not afraid to show pain and emotion. You can hear coming through very strongly right here. Bakari Kitwana is with us from Cleveland, Ohio, hip-hop historian. Franny Kelly is with us, co-host of NPR's hip-hop podcast, Microphone Check. We're talking about the evolution of the politics of rap and hip-hop from Straight Outta Compton to right now. 800-423-8255 is our number. Wyatt in Boston, thank you for calling, Wyatt. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty well. What do you know, Wyatt?
Well, I've been privileged to have been on tour with Tupac, Snoop Dogg. I was in Compton, was in Crenshaw Boulevard area when the riots happened. Actually, recorded
the Rodney King riots, you
mean? Records.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rodney King,
mm-hmm.
and was there actually recording an album with Michael Douglas, the actor, had a record label, and what he wanted to do was capture the energy of the streets, and he signed my crew, and we were there. And the thing that I really thank you for with this conversation is that it is about stories. It's about telling stories and being real. There's a binary kind of culture in hip-hop where conscious versus, you know, the rough, rugged stuff, or mm-hmm. you know, 80s hip-hop versus 90s hip-hop, 90s hip-hop versus 2000. And one of the things that I just would love for the for your experts, if you will, to
yeah.
talk about
yeah.
is how has the story changed? I'm an insider. I'm privileged. I have black privilege in this context because
okay.
I was there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I want to know what is really happening now. What are they? What's their sense of what's happening now?
Wyatt, give us yours first. I'll put it to them. But in terms of the story that moves in hip-hop or rap today, what sells, what's sung, what's most potent, what do you see happening?
I think it all comes down to love. I think what we're looking at is a love narrative. J. Cole loves his community. Kendrick Lamar loves his community. You look at all the newest rappers, they love who they are and where they come from. And when you're in the studio, one of the most brilliant moments in the movie was when they were in the studio. And they were kind of going back and forth. And it was a funny moment where they said, Cube, why don't you do it? Why don't you rap? And then, like, here comes Eazy-E saying, all right, I'll get in there. And then they laughed with them. There was love there. There was a lot of love there. And I think the love even came through in that moment. I know it's kind of a corny thing to say. It's about love, but I really do believe that.
You know, it doesn't sound so corny when we have the sound of J. Cole in our ears. He's got that very emotional sound there in Be Free. All we want to do is take the chains off. All we want to do is be free. Wyatt, hang on. It doesn't all sound like that. Here's a little bit from Run the Jewels. This is Close Your Eyes and Count to I Can't Say It. Here we go.
Well, my thugs and my cripples and my blooders and my brothers, when you don't unite and kill the police or take over a jail, get them COs hell, the burning of that sofa, damn, I love the smell. Blankets and pillow torches,
up the warden. And when you find them, we don't kill them, we just waterboard them. We killing them for freedom because they tortured us for boredom. And even if some good was the Lord will sort them. We
out of order. Wyatt, my dear caller in the biz, boiling down to love right there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's about love. And see, here's the thing. The coolest thing about this conversation is that it is going to spark more creativity. And it's once people get into these studios and really start thinking about what they want to say, if they come from their heart, if they speak from the heart, love will be in there. And I think we can have an analysis. We can look at the data. We can look at all the record sales and ticket sales. We can do all of that until the cows come home. It all comes down to the heart of the matter, which is the beat of love, if you will.
I so appreciate your call, Wyatt. Let us pick it up, if we may. Bakari, love, anger, anguish. Where do you see the story, the themes going?
I think it's all of that. I mean, I think I'm glad that the caller called in. And there's definitely love coming from artists who are talking about what's going on right now in these communities with police violence, often killings of unarmed black men and women and folks who aren't black. So I think there's a lot of love. We're talking about hip hop. Talib Kweli should be mentioned as someone who recently wrote about going to Ferguson and his experiences there, and even talking with J. Cole about, you know, being a part of the current movement. He writes about this in Mike.com in an article called From Ferguson to Freedom. He recently, on the anniversary of Mike Brown's death, pulled together a concert, a benefit concert for some of the activist groups in Ferguson, and Common participated, as well as Jasiri X, as well as Tef Poe and others.
And we, of course, just heard that from Run the Jewels, Run the Jewels 2. Pitchfork called it Album of the Year last year, versus primarily by Killer Mike, but you can hear his partner LP there as well. Keep It Real was sort of the buzz phrase of this world for a long time. Let's do a little of that with not music, but just sound off the streets. This is last night out of St. Louis, police firing tear gas. Demonstrators arrested 9 people, gathered after police shot and killed an 18-year-old. They said pointed a gun at them. Here's some video shot by a bystander. St. Louis, last night.
They are shooting gas on residential streets.
And you can hear the helicopters there, a little bit of the gas here. August last year, St. Louis County resident Steve Wilkins shared his outlook on the situation in Ferguson with PIX 11 News.
You have a picture from 2014 and a picture from 1960, and they're looking damn near identical. They got the dogs out. And there's a problem. You telling me we ain't made no progress in 50 years? My mom and them marched with Martin Luther King. You know what I'm saying? Where's the progress?
And here's Aroya Davis near Ferguson talking with NPR in March of this year at a memorial to Michael Brown.
It's a symbol of what's going on with the black people here. War is being waged on us.
And let's listen. The Black of the Berry, Kendrick Lamar, 2015, off To Pimp a Butterfly.
Hypocrite in 2015. When I finish this, if you listen, then sure you will agree. This plot is bigger than me. It's generational hatred. It's cynicism. It's grimy little justification. I'm African American. I'm African. I'm black as the heart of a f***ing Aryan. I'm black as the name of Tyrone and Darius. Excuse my French, but you know y'all. That's as blunt as it gets. I know you hate me, don't you? You hate my people. I can tell because it's threats when I see you. I can tell because your waist is evil. No, I can tell because you in love with the
I know you hate me, don't you? From Kendrick Lamar. Larry in Miami Beach. Larry, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Well, I'm a 74-year-old white guy. I saw the movie last night. I've been a civil rights activist for quite a while, even growing up in the Midwest. I saw the movie, and I was struck by a feeling of despair in the middle of the movie in that Detroit segment that 30 years later, it's getting worse. Pondering what to do. I think we've got to realize our economic system requires a suppressed underclass, and racism is part of this, along with the suppressing the immigrants who fear arrest just about as much as anybody else. We've got freedom of speech that says that we can say rude things about the police, but then you get the backlash. That's police violence against blacks. We're getting backlash in a general sense by the fact that we've got our first black president. It's too bad, though, that we live in a country where it's been decided all the way up to the Supreme Court that it's okay for the police to kill black people. We've got to realize that this is what we've come to, and we've got to try to really boil down onto that it's getting worse.
Larry, I appreciate your call. Bakari, the keep it real idea was always in the realm of rap and hip-hop. Is it doing that today? You hear how Larry saw the movie looking back and how he sees looking out at the world right now. Do you see hip-hop keeping it real now?
I don't see a strong push inside of mainstream hip hop to speak to these issues. I think they are sporadic cases, which you've pointed to. I think that the caller is correct in that we have to come to grips as a society about the economic divide in this country. And I think that what we're seeing on the street in Ferguson and in Baltimore and around the country is a continued belief that we can continue to squeeze people and squeeze them and squeeze them and there won't be any repercussions. I think we're now seeing the repercussions. I don't think that the violence is new. I think that one of the things that is new is that we have more and more people who are out of work and out of school, and they're angry, and they are trying to hold this society accountable. And I think until that happens, I think that things are only going to get worse, because what we're seeing right now is very little. After a year of these protests, there's very, very little movement. There's sporadic movements inside of city councils here and there, but at a national level, besides the Obama hearings and the Obama task force around policing and limited DOJ consent decree activity that in many cases isn't effective, there hasn't really been a response by the society to what young people around the country are saying about police brutality and killings and really state-sanctioned executions.
I don't know. I mean, you see presidential candidates being buttonholed all over the place by Black Lives Matter, really put on the carpet and asked to respond.
To me, what we're seeing in the responses is the result of an Obama presidency. President Obama raised the bar on politicians deciding that they're at least going to talk about these issues. He talked about the issues when they happened, and we're getting more talk from Hillary Clinton and others, but that still is not any public policy shift that's taken place at a radical level that should be happening given all of these killings that are taking place routinely again last night.
The music keeps coming. Vince Staples here, Hands Up. You can hear the echoes of Ferguson there off Hell Can Wait.
Just a couple, they gunned down around the hood. I guess the pigs split wigs for the greater good. Cause I ain't seen them lock a swine up yet. At the most, they reassign them to prevent protests. Just your color is enough to get you under arrest. Strong hand in the law got me feeling oppressed. If you flip and kill a 50, then you get in the chair. Paying taxes for some clowns to ride around. Whooping scared the men up. Handcuffs giving dashes on the wrist. I used to lift my fist and fight the power with. All the homie told me in his day the pigs was playing. In the trunks and Chevrolet, them traffic stops. Raider homes without a warrant, shooter first without a warning. And they expect respect and non-violence. I refuse the right to be silent.
Yeah, put your hands in the air. Put your hands in the air.
Vince Staples with Hands Up. Young rapper, 22, out of Long Beach, California. That came out in October of last year, of course, after Ferguson. In his performances, he often dedicates that song to the Black Lives Matter movement. Franny, our caller Wyatt earlier talked about the story that dominates in hip-hop, or political hip-hop, if you want to call it that, these days. How do you see it?
Well, you know, I just want to make one thing clear. A lot of the musicians that you've played today, with great respect for everything that Bakari is saying about independent hip-hop and the artists that he mentioned, J. Cole, Vince Staples, and Kendrick Lamar are all on major labels, and they're all on the radio. And their success, their continued success, means there will be more in their footsteps. So that is a positive sign. And you know, if we support them, hopefully there will be more opportunities for musicians that do like take hard lines and say things out loud. You know, Ali and I interviewed J. Cole right after he dropped his album last year, and he spoke to us about Be Free, and he was worried. He spoke about his hesitation at stepping into a leadership role. I think that this generation of musicians is, like, more self-aware than ever. They get instant feedback. And he was very worried about saying the wrong thing. He said that he'd had conversations with Kendrick Lamar about, you know, I think both of them, their goal is to erase gangs and figure out a way for real unity to happen. But
What does he mean by the wrong thing? I mean, NWA was saying a lot of things that were considered wrong by the mainstream at the time.
Oh my God. I mean, taking on the pressure of being a leader of your people, you know, when you're just in your 20s, it's terrifying. I'm surprised I managed to represent myself live on the radio. I mean, come on.
Oh, I get that. Bakari, that leadership of the people coming out of hip hop, do you see it?
I don't think that anyone is asking these guys to be leaders. What they're asking them is to use their art and to express in their art what actually is going on in the community. And this is what's happening in terms of the police. This is one of the largest conversations that's happening right now. My point about, you get independent artists. I'm sorry, you get mainstream artists here and there who make political statements now. But my point is that one of the differences about groups like Public Enemy and KRS-One and others is that they took on a conscious persona, and they decided, groups like X-Clan, that they were going to represent politics in their music, and that's what they were going to do. And I think that everyone knows who's a musician that there's a price to pay for that. I mean, I think Lauryn Hill is a good example of that. There's a price to be paid if you're going to be political and you're going to be outspoken. And I think that it's a long-standing tradition within the Black community that recognizes that. And so you have artists saying they're not going to be political because they don't want their careers to suffer. But interestingly, if you go back to the era in which NWA emerges, you have NWA going platinum alongside of Public Enemy. So I think a more interesting question is what happened within the music industry to start to create this shift.
And the music goes on. A little bit more here from Kendrick Lamar and All Right. Cornel West calls it an anthem of the movement among the younger generation that was chanted at Cleveland State after the killing of Samuel DeBose. Bakari Kitwana, hip-hop historian with us from Cleveland, Ohio today. Wonderful to have you here. Thank you so much, Bakari, for coming in.
Thank you.
Franny Kelly, co-host of NPR's hip-hop podcast, Microphone Check. Franny, in Atlanta, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for being with us. Kendrick Lamar, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. My knees getting weak and my gun might blow, but we gonna be all right.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.